Welcome to episode 450 of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and on today's episode, I interview Sam Proctor. Sam is a coach based in Loughborough, and he coaches athletes at both amateur and professional levels, with the most notable name on his roster being India Lee, who finished 8th in the T100 World Tour with one win and one third place to her name. We talk about India's training, of course, and we also talk about Sam's general coaching philosophy, zooming in on the different disciplines, tips for age group athletes, and more in this interview. But before that, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. They create carbohydrate and electrolyte products that are effective, practical, and tasty. Whether it's a caffeine gel before a sprint triathlon to give you an extra boost, or a full-on carbohydrate and electrolyte strategy required for an Ironman, getting your fueling and hydration right can be the difference between achieving or not achieving your goal. And Precision Fuel and Hydration have products that make it as simple as it can be to get your fueling and hydration right. You can easily fine-tune your intakes to your carbohydrate, sodium, and caffeine requirements, ensuring that you get the most out of yourself on race day. Their gels, drink mixes, and chews are easy to digest, making them a reliable choice for any endurance athlete. And you can get a free fuel and hydration plan for your next race with the Fuel and Hydration Planner on the Precision Fuel and Hydration website. And as a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order by using the code TTS24 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the interview with Sam Proctor. Welcome to That Triathlon Show, Sam. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm well. My name's Sam, and I am coach at Intelligent Triathlon Training.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, and it will be nice to have a chat. Can you tell us a bit more about your coaching setup, things like athletes you coach, is it a mix of age group? I know you work with India Lee, do you work with some other pro athletes? Tell us a bit more about that.
So I work with Mark Pierce, who is a previous British triathlon coach many years ago now. I think we keep bringing it up, but it was quite a while ago now. So he runs Intelligent Triathlon Training. We're based in Loughborough. I've worked with Mark for 9 years now as an athlete, and then sort of moved across into being a coach with Mark. And so that's been a fun 9 years, learning and progressing on. I've coached for around, I think I've probably coached for around 5 to 6 years myself. And at the moment, as correctly as you say, I coach at India Lee, which I have done now for just over a year. We started working each other in October of 2023, just before Ironman Florida last year. I also coach a range of athletes, from amateurs to professionals. Rosie Wild as well. She did well in Ironman Lanzarote this year, went on to the world champs. I just started coaching Andrew Horsfall-Turner as well, so a new one on the books in the male side. Probably some notable amateurs of Paul Lunn. He's in the 50 to 54 category. A notable mix of athletes.
And can you give an overview of your coaching and training methodology or philosophy, whatever you want to call it?
whatever we want to call it. We're very scientific based. Mark's a sports scientist and physiologist. We work very closely with Loughborough University's physiology lab. We're very data-driven, science-led. As in the philosophy, it's more just we take each case individually. So, you know, we deal with the data that we've got and work forward with each athlete individually on what their goals are really and what they want to achieve, rather than a set method in that regard. So
how does the science informed approach what does it look like in practice? So, and when you say that you work closely with the physiology lab, is that something that is still very much dependent on the athlete's ability and willingness to get into the lab, and you can work to different levels of precision, or do you generally encourage athletes to do a certain number of lab tests in a year to work from lab values and so on? Can you describe that in a bit more detail?
Yeah, I think each case is individual. We do recommend, to help do our job, it is good to have that baseline of testing, just to see. I think it's when you're dealing with a new athlete, I just like to get a good baseline of where thresholds are at and what happens when we do X sessions, or, just to get in a good baseline of where they're at. It's not a deal breaker. We can still work with other aspects to help find thresholds and stuff at home, but it is just something that we find very useful in helping directing an athlete's training, whether they are an elite, an amateur, or a professional. The data for us is the important bit, not the athlete's ability.
So if I'm a new amateur athlete that starts working with you and I have the ability to get into the lab, what sort of test battery would you recommend I start with?
So because we mainly deal with long course athletes, Ironman athletes, long course, we generally go towards a submax fuel utilization test and then a VO2 max test. The submax being the prominent one, we tend to just stick the VO2 max one on foot to find out VO2 max and see what happens to their max lactate. And if you've ever seen one, it's quite good for entertainment value as a coach. So that's quite a fun sight to see. Generally the fuel utilization test within the submax test, which is it generally is around 8 to 10 stages of 6 minute, then it goes up in wattage increments on the bike and pace increments on the treadmill for the run.
And how would the results of that kind of test then influence the training prescription?
For example, so we generally go there to see where LT1 is and where LT2 is at that given time. And again, depending on what the person's aspirations are and goals are, if they're wanting to look at doing an Ironman, we'd like to see where LT1 is, for example, and then look at how good LT1 is close to LT2, or building up their LT1 because it needs more work. And but then again, if they're a short course athlete or wanting to do middle distance at the top end of only looking to race for 3.5-4 hours, we might look at raising LT2. Again, all athlete dependent, but that's the sort of the general base of how we use the data. And another key element for us for it is the fuel utilization side of it, so seeing what the athlete's actually burning at, say, a race intensity or race wattage. From the test results, we'll get a gram per minute of either of the fats and carbs they're burning at any given watts in that stage.
Would that then influence how you recommend what fueling strategy you recommend for the race, or would you still, even for athletes that that are quite, let's call it, fat adapted, still recommend a pretty high amount of carbohydrates as long as they can tolerate it and within the general guidelines?
We'd go back to see. It's funny that I've never actually had anybody that reads under what they think. So most people would seem to be, certainly the more experienced athletes, reading higher than what they would actually think. So no, we tend to would build a race plan around that, which would be trialed, in testing, in training before we went into a race. But we certainly look at the data from the testing to help plan a fueling strategy for their race. It's not in isolation. The results aren't just solely based on that. We use everything as to build a picture rather than just anything in isolation.
Yeah, got it. If we go into each discipline in a bit more detail, and maybe you can discuss a few key concepts of how you view training and performance development within each of the disciplines, starting with swimming. What are some key things that you would highlight for developing the swim in a triathlete?
So not technique based, just sort of, are we talking about somebody that can swim? Because I'm guessing the two situations would be different, for example.
Yeah, so you can give an example for both.
Okay, so for an athlete who we could relatively swim relatively well, and we weren't looking to do a huge amount of technique focused work. For us, it would be a lot more sort of fatigue resistance work. So we're not a massively big on big volume for like triathlete swimmers. I think, you know, we aim for anything for somebody, a professional maybe would be, and a good swimmer would be around 15 to 20 kilometers a week. But within that, they would have a good base of, most sessions had some sort of work in. They wouldn't just be a very easy swim. We tend to have a structure of a VO2 swim, a CSS swim, and then an extensive endurance, we call it an extensive endurance swim, which would be a steady swim with some, a bit of sort of tempo, pull pad and CSS in, but not a huge amount of it, just to create a bit more of a stimulus, but without getting the longer sessions in. So that's one thing we found works really well with majority of our athletes, that certainly, again, time-starved athletes, and as well as people who aren't time-starved, we found that is generally a very good balance of swimming, not to do too much. And then again, a very similar protocol would probably swap out one of those extensive endurance swims for a technique swim for somebody who we was looking to help progress their swim technically, because we just found that swimming a lot sometimes, that when the form goes, and that it's for somebody who's struggling with technique and form, swimming just a lot isn't always, well, very rarely in our experience, is the right scenario. Swimming well is better.
Would that swimmer who is struggling more with technique, would they still be doing something like a VO2 swim and a CSS swim that you mentioned, but then the technique swim would be replacing that extensive endurance swim?
Yes, correct. And that's generally where we'd aim. And then, but once the form started to struggle too much, we would probably, the VO2 and CSS swims, what I'm trying to say, wouldn't be as big as what somebody who was, if we wasn't working on technique so as much, you know. So once form and technique really started to suffer, we'd bring down would cap the intensity at that and try and build it up as we went along. Certainly over the winter periods, we'd try and build that swimming up to get more VO2 and working as this under better technique.
I guess on that, so if you are somebody that you're trying to improve your technique, you have some flaws in your technique, but maybe especially for people that don't have access to a coach on deck, like a master's squad or something like that, so they're basically on their own, what are some tips that you would give for how they can improve their technique?
Get a coach. I would split it up into, if the time is doing your technique work, a threshold swim and one extensive endurance swim. That is how I would split it up without looking at each case individually. We work very individually with athletes, so each swimmer is going to need a different. Each swim is a different case. So, if it's in a session wise, I would split it up with a technique and an endurance swim and a threshold swim.
And moving on then to the bike leg. So, what are some principles that you would use for developing the bike in a triathlon context?
Oh, so in the bike, we'd have very much. For me, it's certainly long course athletes. I found that we are very much developing that high end aerobic, low end threshold, lactate threshold ones area. So for us, it's a lot. We use shuttling sessions a lot for increasing that side of things. So you're accumulating sort of anything up to sort of 90 to 100 minutes of just over and just under LT1, which again, I was with an athlete this morning and we decided that, you know, like we're looking at that as a whole session rather than an individual rep, because it could be up to 10 times 5, 12 times 5 minutes on and 1.5 minutes off. So you could look at it as an individual rep, but actually we want to look at that as one long rep, because it's shuttling the session rather than just an individual, say, 3-minute threshold session. So, but we found with other athletes as well, you know, that actually lifting their ceiling is helping as well. So who are doing 70.3s, we found that we have a couple of athletes who race in the professional field over the years, and the professional male field again could be quite surgy. So, you know, we've also found that having a very good, a high fatigue resistance rate, but we also need to be able to clear lactate at a high intensity, because we could be surging at anything over 400 or 500 watts for up to 90 seconds. So again, that's something that we would focus on. So athlete dependent. So if I could give one key session to go away for a long course athlete, would be a shuttling session around your LT1.
Mm. So it's something like, you said 5-6 minutes, a little bit above LT1, and 90 seconds a little bit below.
Yeah. So we sort of work on like a 4-to-1 ratio, or, you know, so it can be a longer, you know, as the athlete gets more conditioned to doing them, you could pick it up to 10, 12 minutes. But, you know, sometimes we'd start off at the lower end of the range, but more reps, just to get that, the shuttling of the underneath a bit more frequent, just while the athlete got conditioned to doing the reps. But then as time went on, we would, and they became more resilient to it, we'd pick the reps up to longer reps, but less intervals of them. So, but you could still accumulate the time at LT1.
Yeah. And how would you approach the kind of base volume, if we call it that, on the bike? Because you mentioned being focused on kind of the LT1, so high, medium aerobic, low end threshold side of the spectrum. So would you be aiming to do even the quote unquote easier bike sessions at not too easy of a power or heart rate, or how do you approach that?
Yeah. So again, we wouldn't be ridiculously easy. Certainly for cycling, I think it can be a lot of time wasted on a bike just soft pedaling. I like to call it like a tight chain, for example. It doesn't have to be super hard, but it has to be an endurance pace. I'm certainly one that doesn't just like rolling around on my bike. So we like to have we call it steady, not easy, I suppose RPE wise would probably be looking at a 4 to 5 out of 10, you know, something that's not ridiculously easy, but it you need to be able to sustain it for 2 to 3 to 4 hours. I'm guessing, you know, the RPE would come down the longer you're going, because obviously you're going to get the fatigue as the time goes on. So but yeah, we're certainly not soft pedaling endurance rides. They need to have some backbone to them.
Yeah. And the final question on the bike there, how do you view how much time spent on the TT bike versus potentially on a road bike or other bikes?
I very much like, I would give a couple of examples. Professional athlete who's training on the bike 12 to 15 hours a week, I think, you know, majority of the key sessions, you know, anything that's a race pace intensity or below would be in the TT bike. If they maybe wanted to stick one of the endurance rides a week on the road bike, then that's okay. But I'd like to get probably 80% of the work done on a TT bike. And then the less time you spend on the bike, that becomes higher. So I think for an amateur athlete, I'd like to get pretty much majority of the work done on the TT bike, just because it's, you know, you need to make use of the time you've got on the bike rather and make yourself conditioned to being on it. And the less time you're on it is the less time being conditioned. So, and depends on the time of year as well. I think sort of off season, later in the winter, earlier in the winter, maybe not as important, but certainly majority of your rides coming into a race would be, on the TT bike. We tend to say anything threshold and over, well, certainly anything like VO2 max wise can be done on the base bar, or anything under FT threshold and under can be done in the TT position.
So, yeah. And then the final question here before moving topics a little bit. Are you a proponent of using strength training?
Yes, I'm happy to prescribe it within a plan. I don't set sessions as such because I'm not a strength and conditioning coach, but I'm happy that some athletes like to do it. And I think we've seen in certain athletes, it can work. Again, it's very individualized, but there is certainly a place for it in a triathlon plan, yes. It just needs to be in the right place, in my opinion, not just stuck in anywhere. It needs to, as long as it's not hindering the key sessions.
Yeah. So then let's discuss a little bit around India Lee's training, because she's had a great season. She won the first T100 race of the season in Miami, and also has a third place from Ibiza, and so a great season with a couple of podiums and wins in world-class fields. So what factors would you say have been important in allowing her to take this step in her development of basically competing at this world-class level, where maybe she wasn't quite there before, maybe just under that level?
I think, you know, we got on very well, good friends. She's a very consistent athlete. I think, you know, she's got an extremely good base. So I think the one thing we found when we started working together was we put a bit more intensity in the plan. Certainly a lot more higher end sort of VO2 bike sessions, and run sessions. And we did a lot of work on, the power on the run as well, so to help with pacing and sort of effort management. And that, you know, that's something that's really sort of we found help, because I felt that the performances were there, but having that pace control and having that resilience at the top end of where, you know, if you look at the races she's done well in there, the shorter rate, you know, the T100s and the Challenge Championships, they're shorter distance races, so the intensity is quite high. Because it's so having that sort of doing a bit of work around the VO2 has really sort of stamped her success, really. Because, you know, she was a fit athlete before she came and started working with us. It was just sort of a bit of fine tuning, really, which is sort of was the missing piece and has really worked this year. We found.
Yeah, interesting. So, what when you say that you have her intensity has increased a bit, around what sort of volume are you working on a weekly basis?
On average, well, a good week is around 25 to 28 hours. That is probably her highest week. Maybe on camp you might get to 30, but generally around sort of 23 to 26 is a good, would probably start around 23 and finish a block on around 26 to 20. Nothing groundbreaking, but it's
So when you increased the intensity, the volume has been the same, but it was a bit more of increasing intensity within that volume.
I think have reduced the volume a little bit from where she was at before. But again, because we swapped that out with a bit more intensity, something sort of had to give. And we found that putting in those VO2 sessions we're getting a lot more gains from them than we would say what the time she was spent doing the endurance. Like I say, she's a very conditioned athlete. She's been racing a few years now. So the actual base side of things wasn't a problem. It was actually working the top end that we found has really been the biggest gain for us.
Mm. So about the VO2 sessions then, can you give some examples of what those sessions have looked like for India?
So on the bike, it was a very simple philosophy, really. We started at around 2 minutes at VO2 with a 1-to-1 ratio, so a 2-minute effort with 2 minutes recovery, and then we've sort of looking at around 10 to 12 reps, and we've just built that up over as the time went on. As she got a bit more conditioned to doing them, we went to 3 minutes and then up to 4 minutes. So that's sort of how we approach the bike, and that top end power we've really found, and achieving that top end power has really helped her conditioned her really well in races, because there is points when she has to go quite a bit harder, and so that's being able to do those efforts has really helped in a race, and not take it's learning that it's not taking too much out of her now. The swim, we've always just done the same ever since we started working. So we have a VO2 swim a week, and we sort of break that up as the season goes on into sort of some longer VO2 reps, maybe 7,500. But then coming into a race, near races, we'll do sort of like absolute speed work where it's like 25 meters, 20 meters, you know, 15 meters, just for that real sort of get out pace, to getting into that front group. I think that was quite evident in Ibiza. That really helped. Getting in that front group sort of helped the really made India's race in the swim. Having those faster swimmers there, that was a great addition. Flora and Taylor being there has really sort of helped that swim pack get away a bit more. And the run, we sort of probably, I suppose the biggest one was we started doing a bit more track work, 400s, 300s with sort of 100 meter jog recovery straight into another, you know, sort of just over threshold on at 300, and then just done, and then sort of only a 30 second recovery. So, you know, quite short, quick turnaround, but focusing on the quality running.
How much total work would you aim for in a running session of at VO2?
So it would be a mix of threshold and VO2 sort of within that session. So we'd start off with threshold to create a bit of fatigue first and then do a bit more. So at the moment, we're up to around 10K worth of work within the session. So the main set being around 10 kilometers worth. But that will come probably anything from 8 to 12 would be the max 12 if it's sort of closer to threshold. And then sort of 8 if it's a lot more VO2. So, but we find that just doing that little bit over threshold really does help with India's pace.
Yeah. And I mean, it's been clear that her bike has, as you said, improved a lot, and it's a real weapon now. Are there any other things that you can point to other than just adding the VO2 work, anything else that stands out in her bike training that has led to her current level, which is one of the best bikers in the sport?
For me, if you asked Indy, she'd say the VO2 work. If you ask me, I say we also do a shuttling session. That's that annoying word, shuttling. But this one is for LT2. So this one would be around a 15 minute block of around sort of over threshold, under threshold two. So for me, that's sort of really helped the fatigue resistance side of things. So, you know, working quite hard just over threshold for 15 minutes accumulative is being just on that fine line of threshold, but sort of 3 to 4 blocks of that, stuff like that. And I think generally we've also brought the intensity of the endurance rides up a little bit as well. So, you know, maybe not as much volume as what she was doing, but there's a bit more focus on the stuff she is doing, rather than focus of the intensity, rather than just going out and riding your bike. We found, because being so fit, just going out and riding the bike doesn't really have an aspect of, you're not really gaining anything. You're just spinning the legs, not gaining any cardiovascular benefit, aerobic benefit.
With the shuttling session, in this case, the LT2 shuttling, there's something that actually you see a lot of questions and thoughts about it online, social media, and so on. And where would you place the overs and the unders, whether it's a percentage of threshold or FTP, or how do you prescribe it more specifically?
So we have a few different sessions, but generally, so we look at the two. So this one was like, say, a 2 minute interval would be around 103 to 108%, and then the 2 minutes around 80 to 85%. But that, you know, that's the extreme version. So each one would sort of pop up differently. So it's
we have different varieties of sessions for different what we're trying to achieve. That one was short, a bit higher percentage, but it was a shorter, they're shorter blocks. Whereas, you know, I'd probably be around 101 to 104 if we're going for like a longer, like 4 to 5 minutes, you know. So just depending on how long the actual block is, we're two on, two off there, off, you know, again, not really off, but just, and that's the, again, the key thing about those shuttling sessions, and it isn't each individual rep as a whole that is important. It's the whole block of the interval that, you know, because if you start going too easy it in the offs, it's not going to, you're not going to have the same stimulus, and it's not really what the in session is intended for, because 2 minutes at 103% shouldn't be that hard. But you start combining that with only having 85% recovery, it gets quite tasty towards the end.
Yeah, for sure. And have there been any other things other outside the training that you have worked on and focused on that have been important and contributed to in this development?
No, I think she's we've got a good training group. She trains with Kat Matthews a fair bit when she's in Loughborough. We just have we try not to overthink things too much. Just as a general, a good balance of training and life, really. You know, outside of triathlon. So yeah, nothing sort of groundbreaking in that regards. We just looked at fueling again when she came to us. We did some lab testing, but she was pretty dialed in that aspect already, so that wasn't too much of a problem. So yeah, it wasn't a huge amount that was we had to change. It was just a few fine tunes that sound fit. And then, you know, the positive sort of outcome from winning a race, and, you know, it just make the belief that you can do it, is it all sort of accumulates to really sort of set you up for a good year. And I think that's what happened at Miami. It was all of a sudden India started believing that she could do it, and sort of got into her head that she can do it. And I think that positive mindset has really had a good turn on the year.
Yeah, that makes sense. So finally on India's training, can you take us through an example training week? So you can choose whichever, but I don't know if she's now in a preparation block for the T100 grand final, and that could be interesting for as an example.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, happily. So this week is she's traveling on Sunday, so I wouldn't say it was a normal week, but it's still a pretty solid week up till. So on a Monday, she'll do an extensive endurance swim today, which is a pretty standard session. It's 3 500s and then 3 100s tempo with pull and paddles, and she'll do that three times through. So again, just getting some longer blocks at a steady pace, and then some bit of tempo strength work at pull paddles. Not particularly that we're looking to make strength gains, but again, just a different stimulus in an endurance session. Again, 3 100s at tempo isn't an overall too fatiguing, but it will just create that little bit of additional stimulus. And then just an endurance bike today. She had a track session yesterday, so we tend to sort of, after a hard run, we would have had a couple of days running into it, so just an easier bike today. Just an aerobic bike. Tomorrow will be it's quite a hard swim, so that focus on a VO2 swim, but coming into a race, it'll be sort of shorter, sharper intervals. And then we've actually got a shuttling run session tomorrow, which is a minute, 20 times a minute, just over threshold, and then a minute easy, but again, not too easy. So the focus is on a 40-minute block, at around sort of tempo pace, but because we're coming into sort of a race, I'd just like to get that that threshold sort of really after we went to Vegas, we missed a little bit of training there, so just trying to create that threshold stimulus, but not doing too much work at over threshold at the moment. So, and then an easy ride in the hot tent in just, well, not, it won't be an easy ride because it'll be in the hot tent. Cause so it'll be a ride off the back of the run in the hot tent, just trying to be doing a bit of heat prep for Dubai. So that's Tuesday. Wednesday, we've got, again, a 3-hour ride with some sort of threshold sort of intervals in. It will be, what's this one? It's, I think it's 4 times 2 minutes, 4 times 2 minutes at threshold, and then 2 times 7 minutes at sweet spot sort of tempo pace. Again, just creating a bit of stimulus. Not the focus, if she's tired, isn't too much on the efforts. It's more just sort of keeping the body sort of awake for a bigger session later in the week. And what day is that? And an easy run, easy 60-minute run. And then we sort of start bringing down the volume a little bit, and then into the weekend. Thursday is just a lighter swim, nothing. It's just got some 50s in it, basically, with every other one, well, every third or fourth one being a bit harder. So just, again, just creating a bit of a stimulus, but not fatiguing her too much as we start getting ready to travel. So, and then there is a 3x15 bike ride in the afternoon, at more sort of a race intensity, just to sort of get that feel, sort of 10 days out, not a massive volume session, but just that, that race intensity feel just coming into a race. Sometimes we switch that sort of session around depending on the race and what the training's been beforehand. But where we didn't race in Vegas, we just felt that sort of getting that race intensity in would be quite useful. And Friday, we've got a sort of smaller version of Sunday's run that she did yesterday on Sunday. So we'll head back to the track on Friday, and then an aerobic swim. And then Saturday,
what would the run be?
The run is on the track. So it's a warm up, and then you 4x2 minutes at VO2, and then 3x3 at just below, just above threshold, but not quite around threshold, shall we say. And then 2x4 minutes at threshold as well. Again, sort of coming in 10 days to just inside 10 days out of the race, the sort of, it's more of a, not so much we're looking for too many gains now. It's more just fine tuning and working those key areas of the threshold VO2 really without creating too much fatigue. So, and then she's traveling on Sunday, so just an easy bike ride on Saturday. So that equates to, we've got 19 hours of training, 1,000 TSS score, if you look at that. But our swims do accumulate TSS. I know some people don't count TSS swimming, but we do. So.
What would the hours on the bike and the hours on the run be within those 19 hours?
So on the bike, we've got 11 hours and the run 3.5. A little bit lighter on running this week. And then swims 4-5. It'll be around 5 hours, but not actual swimming. It'll be in the pool.
Yeah. And how many meters of swimming?
Meters of swimming this week, that's 19,000. 19,000 prescribed, yeah. India tends to swim around 4 times a week, so we don't push it too much. Certainly this close to a race anyway, and the last one of the season.
And just for context for listeners, we're speaking here on the 4th of November, so this is the penultimate week before the week described is the week before race week, the week leading into race week.
Yeah, so a bit less volume. Grand final. Yeah, a bit less volume than what we would normally have, but the intensity, we've got a fair bit, the intensity still there. We've found works quite well with India is knocking off a bit of the volume, but keeping some intensity in there. And that sort of creates the less fatigue that we require to get ready for the race.
Yeah. Moving on to a different topic again. So I want to ask some questions specific for age group triathletes. So the first one is always an interesting one. How can age group athletes maximize the time efficiency of their training, or maybe put another way, get the most bang for buck for the time that they have available for training?
Maximize their training. So I think it's, well, I'll certainly get somebody to look over their training personally. But I think is more just when you do train, make sure that you have a one thing that I try and talk to my athletes about and Mark's athletes is, you know, making sure that you understand the session and making sure you are maximizing each session. Being time starved, you know, time efficiency is something that, you know, we always want to do more. So it would be more about just focusing. I think is being honest with yourself what time you have. That's the biggest thing I found working with athletes is that be honest to the time you have and then utilize that time, whether that's, you know, you can do 2 swims, 4 bikes, 3 runs, you know, really utilizing that time and keeping it consistent. That would be one way of sort of maximizing your time is being honest with the time that you've got. And then into sessions wise, it would be sort of what we spoke about earlier is, you know, sort of, if you're just going to do each session at endurance for somebody who wants to be competitive as an age grouper, that's not going to be something that's going to be, you'll just plateau. So, you know, making sure you're doing the right sessions and the sessions are in the right place so you can recover in time to do another key session. That's it. You know, is being clever with your training is somebody, that's how I would personally maximize time efficiency is being sort of clever with your training and making sure you're recovering properly, you know, eating well, sleeping well, all within sort of individual cases. It's quite a juggling act coming from, you know, being time starved. But there's good platforms out there now. There's Zwift, there's things out there that can sort of help you be efficient with your time and, you know, reducing your faff time around training. It certainly can certainly help time efficiency.
Would you say that for athletes with less volume, less training hours, that the proportion of more intense training increases or can and should increase compared to somebody with a high training volume, whether it be a professional athlete or an age grouper training at a high training volume?
Yeah, for sure. You'd have you know, if you're doing less training, I'd put more intensity in. That's for sure. I wouldn't pull it down to a percentage, but many people talk of an 80-20 rule, but I would take it that, you know, you want to maximize your training, and, you know, if that's, you know, your shorter, harder sessions during the week, and then getting in some longer base training at weekends, but again with some work in it just to create that stimulus, then I think that's a really good way of being time efficient is you know, using the time you've got and doing the hard stuff when you've got less time and doing when you've got a bit more time doing your sort of longer, steadier state stuff.
Yeah. Are there any other or any mistakes that you, if you start working with an age grouper, what are some things that you tend to see that, hey, this is an area where we can find some improvements, typical areas where you can make some quick gains when you speak to age groupers that you're just starting to work with?
I think consistency and, like I say, I think comes back to your efficiency and consistency is because we find, you know, some people that try and do too much in, a 10-day to 2-week period or a week period, and then they end up either getting ill, having time off because of fatigue. So it's, you know, balancing that time well with the time you have. So, you know, it's like if you think you've got 10 hours, don't start with 10 hours. Look at sort of building that up, 8, 9, 10. You know, the consistency over the time would be a lot better than trying to do 3 lots of 10. And, you know, and that if that's your absolute limit, and then something happens outside of it and it all falls to pieces. The consistency is not there. So having that consistency is something that one aspect that really is a big, I found, is people, you know, try and say, oh, I've got, I can do this, I can do that. But then it gets to Wednesday or midweek and they can't do it. And it, the whole week goes up in smoke. Another thing is I found quite a lot is, in personal experience, is, you know, people, having elevated, threshold numbers. That's a big key, because I think it's certainly over a long course athletes, you end up sort of digging yourself a bit of a hole if you're training a bit too hard and trying to beat every session. I think that's one thing I have found, is athletes beating sessions and then again not getting that consistency in because they're fatigued too much because they've tried to beat the session. I think it's, if you have a plan, it's trusting the plan and trusting your coach, if you have a coach, to have, not to try and beat sessions and not to try and do too much. That was always one thing I've been taught by Mark over the years, is, you know, the plan's there, you don't need to beat it, you don't need to try and better it, you just need to be consistent with the training.
Yeah, no, good points. And staying within the age group triathlon context, are there things that you could, that you think are overestimated and underestimated, or overrated and underrated within age group triathlon context? And this can be anything from products to training methods or whatever.
I think I've exaggerated, you know, there's having a set way that works for everyone. I think, you know, like as a coach, I said earlier in the show, you know, we work very individualized. So, you know, having like an 80-20 rule for me is not something that I believe that could work. And I think just focusing on yourself is a lot more important. So that's certainly one thing, like, is trying to, I suppose it could be that there is people trying to say that there's loads of different ways. There's one set way that's the best way. I don't think there is one set way that's the best way. I think a training philosophy, I think, you need to find something that works for you. Trying to think of something else. Don't really know. Something that is a fad. I don't want to say anything in case I get into trouble. I think just focus on you as an athlete and trying to, you know, certainly as an amateur athlete, don't overcomplicate things. It sounds really silly, but it is just swim, bike, and run. And accumulating that time as an amateur is more important than trying to see how many lactate tests you can do in a run, or, you know, getting the session done would be a lot more, you know, important than trying to overthink it a bit too much. Don't overthink it.
Yeah.
That's right.
And if anything that's underrated?
Basic training, consistency, is such a basic thing. It's just consistency and good, honest work. I just think just being consistent and focusing on yourself and not overthinking it is underrated. That's underrated. Focus on you and don't overthink it.
I think my experience here is that everybody understands conceptually that consistency is super important, but it's incredibly hard to be objective with yourself about whether you're consistent or not. And everybody kind of thinks that they are consistent until somebody else points out that this is actually not what consistency looks like.
Yeah, and for people's conception of what's consistent are different as well, isn't it? You know, like, we could all have a different, but, you know, from my experience, I'm not saying you need to do the same session every week on a Tuesday or the same session every week on a, you know, every day. It's just about, you know, getting out the door, being consistent with your training, you know, and keeping that aerobic base, because, you know, if you do 5 days on and 3 days off, you then got to spend the next 2 to 3 days getting back to where you were. You know, it's about, you know, if it's only an hour a day, that is better than 5 hours on one day, you know, from that side of aspect. That's what, you know, that's my side of consistency. I'm not saying you need to do a threshold session every Tuesday and if you miss it on a Tuesday because you did it last Tuesday, you can't move it to a Thursday the next week. It's more about getting out the door and just keep that aerobic training going that will be, you'll find that in the long run a lot more beneficial. That's what I would look at as consistent.
Yep. And then just a few general and reflective questions to finish off. And the first one is a kind of timely question. Christmas is coming up relatively soon. So what is one triathlon-related thing that you would put on your wish list?
On my wish list? One triathlon. I wish that Ironman would take the World Champs back to Kona for everyone. There we go. That's my wish.
This is something that somebody can actually give
me. They can. The CEO of Ironman could give me that. If there's one thing that I could, I don't know. I don't really want for much. I'd go for a new TT bike, a disc brake TT bike. There we go. That's what I would.
Yeah. That's probably mine as well.
Yeah, I'm still on
it. Okay. So, yeah. The next question is, how do you learn and improve your craft, coaching craft, that is?
I'm always open to learning. I work with Mark closely. He mentors me. I believe that, you know, we have to make mistakes to learn, and I love the sport. So I just invested in learning, meeting new athletes, working with different athletes. I find working with different athletes, I learn daily because I come up new problems come up daily. So I'm always, I think, just doing the job you learn. And I'm constantly working with Mark and working with the university, yeah, so to improve my knowledge and just have a better understanding daily of how athletes work.
Yep. And is there a specific topic that you're trying to focus on and learning more about at the moment?
A specific topic. I wouldn't say a specific topic. I am trying to just grow generally. I like to grow generally. My biggest one is trying to get the best out of my athletes across a race rather than just an individual sport. So just constantly looking at ways we can, whether that be in nutrition, the bike, the swim or the run, you know, not in that order, but, you know, just generally looking at all of the disciplines and just making sure that there's sort of no stone unturned, and chatting. You know, I think this is a great time of year to learn because you have time to implement it. I think it's always hard in the middle of the season to change too much because, you know, coming into races and stuff, it's hard. So I think this is a great time of year to learn and grow and try new things and see if you can sort of make improvements on the tiny things. Because sometimes if you find a few tiny things, I sort of like the old Dave Brailsford philosophy was, no stone unturned, marginal gains. So I like to sort of keep thinking like that as well, looking at different aspects that some people haven't always thought about. So, and just develop sort of daily, really.
And knowing what you know now as a coach, if you could go back in time to some earlier years for you as an athlete, what advice would you give yourself as an athlete?
Stop training so hard and listen.
Listen to what?
Yeah, listen to. If you have a coach, is listen to your coach. I was probably pretty much. I thought I knew it all, and I just listen and learn. I always used to do things too quick, and I think we find that a lot of the time we try and tell athletes to slow down because, you know, we're 90% of the time doing things too hard rather than having one thing that's focused. So, it would definitely, if I could go back earlier, I would listen more. So, yeah, certainly listen to my coach and slow down a bit.
Yeah. And finally, choose one of the following questions. Either what is the best or most influential book that you've read? Or what is the best advice that you've ever received?
Probably book, I'd say there's probably two books. So I'll go with book, but because So most two influential books I've probably read are Bradley Wiggins and Alistair Brownlee's book, the Brownlee book. They're the two that stick out in my mind. I haven't read many books, so don't get the hump with me. I've just not read many books, but they're the two that stick out. They're two people that, you know, in my career growing up, that were people that I sort of looked up to. So, and I read their books and I found that quite influential. So they would be the
with
two.
The Brownlee book, are you referring to the newer one where he interviewed other athletes, or the old one with both Alistair and Johnny basically talking about their lives and their careers?
The first one they did. I did read both, but the first one, I think I was a fan of the Brownlee brothers when I was growing up. So yeah, and that's what got me stuck on triathlon. So yeah, sort of certainly that sort of influenced me. So yeah, sure. So.
Great. And finally, where can people follow you?
You can follow me personally at Sam Proctor Tri on Instagram, or we've also on the coaching side of things, it's IntelliTri on Instagram. I only really do Instagram, so that's pretty much where, Sam Proctor Tri and IntelliTri.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. Thank you so much, Sam, for this. Best of luck for the final races of the season for your athletes, and I hope to talk to you again another time.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview. As always, you can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com with links to related episodes and other external links to the books recommended by Sam. I did interview Mark Pierce back in episode 247, so that episode will be linked here. Also, I want to give you another reminder about our training camps that we have coming up in 2025. It's getting close now. We're almost at the end of 2024. We have our camp in Mallorca from the 5th to the 12th of April, and the camp in Algarve in Portugal from the 26th of April to the 3rd of May. The Algarve camp is getting quite close to full. We have less than a handful of slots left, so if you've been thinking about that one, now is the time to sign up. For Mallorca, we still have more availability, but it's still better to sign up early to make sure that you get a slot, and also to be able to get cheaper flights, especially if you're flying in from farther away. Now you will probably still be able to find really cheap flights, but that might change in a month or so. With either one of the camps, you get to train and live the lifestyle of a full-time athlete for a week, minus all of the chores like cooking and shopping for groceries and so on. So it's the most fun way to spend a vacation that I know of and that I can think of. Of course, you will go home from the camp with a physical boost in fitness, perhaps with some improved technique as well, and lots of learnings from the interactions with us coaches and also with the other participants at the camp. You get to train in some beautiful places, and I really believe that this has a positive impact not just on your mood and mental state and health, but also on your ability to adapt to the training and get fitness improvements. And probably best of all is that you can do this in a positive and supportive social environment with lots of like-minded people. But also, it's a very diverse and international group of people, which is something that our participants usually always find a great value add, to be able to connect with triathletes from different corners of the world. You can read more about the training camps on scientifictriathlon.com. And if you have any questions or want to register, you can simply email me on michael@scientifictriathlon.com. And I hope to see you on one of our camps in 2025. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high quality, practical and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration. There are a range of options from drink mix to gels to choose, so you can easily find your personal favorite. Don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS24. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.